gathering of information, we organizations have to decide the type of data to be collected and who should collect it. Easy to understand, I don't need to explain this. Normally trained job analysts, supervisors or the employees collect the data. It could be internal sources or it could be external consultants who come and collect the data from you. A new organization needs to appoint job analysts to decide the best method to gather the data. Established firms review the data over a period or when there is a job change due to technology or product change. So, existing company and a company which is going in for a transition. When you're going through a transition, job description has to be properly done. An engineering company is in a certain state and suddenly there's a new technology coming in, they're going in for new products. The entire cultural thinking has to change. And when that changes with a new type of job profiles, automated way of operating stuff, they need to have a new job analysis to be done. The information has to be processed. It's self-explanatory. The data collected needs to be processed for use in various personal functions. It is used to prepare job description and job specification, already seen in the block diagram. Job description, we take this next now. It is a written statement showing job title, tasks, duties and responsibilities involved in a job. I have already explained this to you. It's a simple articulation of what needs to be done. Without any confusion, without any ambiguity. JD also prescribes working conditions, hazards, stress and relationship with other jobs. It tells you whom you are reporting to. It also tells you what sort of a nature of job it is. Traveling job, working in a chemical plant, working with toxic zones in a chemical plant. All that is given in the part of the JD. Why do we need a job description? What are the advantages? JD assesses supervisors in assigning work to the staff. It's very clear cut. There's no confusion. It's used in recruitment and selection as well as for manpower planning. It's a repetition. I've already explained this to you. Performance appraisals are based on JD. Job evaluation to decide remuneration for a job is carried using JD. Already explained to you. JD assists in identifying training needs and thus arrange proper training and development programs. We come to job specification. JS summarizes the human characteristics needed for satisfactory job completion. The human characteristics is what is added to the job description. And then we know that this job needs to be done in this manner, under these conditions, by a person A, B or C. So when we interview, what are we doing? We are ensuring whether that person has got the characteristics to do this job under these circumstances. So there needs to be certain qualifications. Not paper qualification, human attributes, personality, some behaviors, some sort of a thinking process required for the job, experience behind, depending upon what level he is working, paper qualifications for the purpose of having a very decent, customized and a very, very structured approach. See, why do we qualify in a university? What's the purpose? See, I can do a BE mechanical by studying the books, all the books of engineering I can study, I'll know everything about it. But when I go through a structured approach, there is a discipline which I learn, and there's a checks and controls method of doing it, so that I calibrate how well I've gone ahead or not going ahead. It's important. So paper qualifications are not everything, but the paper qualifications, the purpose of the paper qualification is to ensure that the person who's working is understanding the need for structured approach and a disciplined approach. If I have a structured and a disciplined approach on my own, then paper qualifications are not important. But then most of the human beings would not be self-driven to become educated on their own. Hence we need structured qualifications to back up as one of the prerequisites for a job to be done. One of the reasons why qualification is always considered as a is taken in the front seat. Although many people say these days that qualifications are not important, skills are important. I too subscribe to that to a point. But beyond a point, skills, if they are not backed up with a very structured approach, the skills can go haywire. In fact, in my experience, I can tell you that structured approach gives you an ethical base of operating. I am adding the dimension of ethical base of operating. A discipline puts you into a thinking process wherein you are able to discriminate what needs to be done, what is correct and what is not correct. You may not do it if you are not going through the structured path. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but the tendency for you to follow certain steps, it's very easier when you are going by this path. Okay. The required personal attributes that are classified as essential, desirable and contraindicated. This is, I've already given you this. In preparing human resources requirements, there can be disagreements among the different organizations. Like I told you, two companies, same industry, will have different approaches towards job specification. Each will have different. There's a private bank A, there's a private bank B. There are personal banker in private bank A and a private bank B. Now, when I approach both these personal bankers, both of them have got different ways of working. Dealing with us, they do it, they deal with us pretty well as a customer. But the way they work, their back office work, what they do, paperwork and the procedural part of it is very different, because the JD are different in both these banks. And both are competing with each other pretty sharp. Why do we need job specification? What's the advantage? It helps me in preliminary screening of this in the selection process. Very clear. It provides due justification to each job and helps in designing training and development needs and programs. When I have a JD, what happens? I know that this job has got this validation. It validates the job. It says this is the job. When you put it in paper, people know clearly this is what I need to do. Hence, it has to be done very clear cut. Supervisors use JS for counseling. How? When an employee is not going through a bad patch. So supervisors come along and they take the job specification, tell them, look, this is what I'm expecting from you, this is what your job profile says. This is not happening. Now in this job profile, you need to do these things. So it helps him to recollect and understand that, hey, I think I should have done this, but I've not done this. Sometimes people meander away. So it becomes a controlling element to bring them back to the job profile to which they belong. Okay. Job evaluation is carried using JS. JS is used by management in decisions on promotion, transfers and awards of extra benefits to the employees. Self-explanatory. There is no need to explain this. Now we talk about interview. What are these interviews? These are not job interviews. These are interviews to, we interview people to understand what is a job. Not job interview for taking a, for getting selected to a vacancy. This is not that. This is an interview that we do for collecting information. So the job analyst interviews the employee and his supervisor to get information about the job. This provides personal touch to the process, but consumes more time. When I go one to one with you, it's much better. Today we are having, you know, we start doing all sorts of research online. We have either through the web or through the multimedia thing, which is impersonal. But when I meet you in person, things are different. So the personal approach actually gives you more authentic data, and you can check and cross check because you're having a conversation. Job data may be subject to bias of the interviewer. Every person, even when we're interviewing people for a selection process, between interviewer A and interviewer B, there's a personal bias. We carry our own biases in our life. So that's one thing we need to guard against. Often employee provides inaccurate data. It's possible, I wouldn't say often, but most of the time the employee gives the data based on what he or she perceives. So that data needs to be cross-checked by us. So that's why one single source or one single interview is not going to give you the entire picture. You need to talk to a number of people and then take something which is common to all, get an idea, use your own judgment and your backup, and then create a JD or a JS. Effective collection depends upon interviewer and the ability of the employee to provide meaningful responses. The most important crucial part in this interview process is the skill of the interviewer and how he interprets data. The more experienced he is in this area, his interpretation of words, sentences and communication coming from XYZ becomes much more easier and effective. And inexperienced people would take data as it is and they'll interpret it in a very shoddy fashion, which is not practicable, and then the whole thing will go for a toss. This is happening in many places. Observation, very important. We need to observe. The job analyst here observes the employee at work, records work being done, the way it is done, and the time taken to complete the task. This can come through what is called as a work study. The person is doing work and I observe him. When I observe him, I see how he is doing the work. So I get to know. Now this, an average person does a work in 10 minutes. Somebody else will do the same work in 5 minutes, fast guy. Somebody else may be a slow coach, 20 minutes. So by observing, I come to know what sort of mind muscles and other type of resources the person is using. A lot of things we get in when we observe. One is through one-to-one interview, the second one is observation. Okay? It can be applied to repetitive and less skilled jobs. It takes more time and the job analyst has to be trained for this method, which involves additional cost. For doing an observation, you need to have an experienced person. Experience in age, experience in a vast area of activities. Because observation could be very subjective. Now, an experienced person is able to interpret the observation data much more effectively. Hence, experience counts for this particular task. Question and method. This is a very common thing. Employees complete a structured questionnaire provided to them. Questionnaire asks for all required data about the job. Completed questionnaires are reviewed and then approved by supervisors. Data about a large number of jobs is collected in a short period of time with minimal staff, plus all employees participate in the process. This is not done everywhere all the time. This is a basic steps, the process which needs to be followed. See, anything which we are learning in HR, friends, is giving a certain way of operating, a certain scientific approach. Now, some companies use this, some companies use it in part, some companies may not use it. So long as the end purpose is served, these guidelines are very, very useful. These guidelines are usually modified in many cases. We may not, for example, interview all the employees. We may interview only some employees. Possible. Okay? Information provided in questionnaires need to be cross-checked for completeness and accuracy. We all know market survey information can be absolutely way out from what the consumer pattern is. It can happen. And there are times when we have to go and check and cross-check with other sources also. That's important. Job performance method is another way of collecting job data. In this method, the job analyst actually performs a job and receives first-hand experience of the contextual factors on the job, including physical hazards, social demands, emotional pressures, and mental requirements. If I am a job analyst, I actually go and do the job. When I do the job, I come to know hands-on experience that these are the complexities of the job. Hands-on. This method is useful for jobs that can be easily learnt. But there are jobs which are little hazardous. This requires special skills. The job analyst may not have the skills to go and actually do the job. For example, going to a hazardous chemical plant. He may not go and work in a chemical plant because that requires certain basic requisites of human behavior, which he may not be skilled and qualified for. So in certain tasks, this method works. Job performance method works. Checklist. We all know that we have a number of things which we plan to do. To-do list. In the to-do list at the end of the day, we'll say, I've done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 is remaining. So this is a checklist is all about that. Method is similar to questionnaire method and only yes and no responses are sought from employees for their job from various activities that are included in the response sheet. Employees can add any task that is not included in the sheet. The method is useful where many jobs are carried by a large number of employees. It's a questionnaire which has got a yes-no answer, bipolar answers. So you answer yes or no, there are no choices except two. And you don't have to qualify by any sentences. Just say yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. Close questions. And you have to answer it and from there they compile it and they say so many yeses and so many noes and so we take this decision. Okay? Technical conference. The job analysts approach supervisors by arranging a conference with them where they seek data about the jobs under review. Since supervisors possess extensive knowledge about jobs, it is essential to collect relevant data at the same time. It's a good method, but since employees are not involved, it lacks accuracy. So we have on one side the job analysts who are the so-called experts, and we have the employees of that particular job which we are going to be analyzing or understanding. So we have a conference type of a format in which experts speak and the employees start giving them, supervisors start giving them inputs, and through the cross exchange they arrive at something which becomes little definable. Diary method. It calls for all employees to maintain details of their activities each day in a diary. It's done in many plants. At the end of the fixed period, data relevant to the jobs is collected from the diaries. I go through an entire activity for the day from morning till evening, 9 to 6 or 9 to 5, and I keep maintain a diary. And then the diary is collected by the job analyst, each of us, when we do the job. And then from there, they see, okay, he's doing these activities. From there, they're able to extract what sort of job functions people are doing for this job. From there, they get some idea about how to go about putting the job analysis in place. It's good method as errors due to memory loss that occur in the case of questionnaire or checklist methods are eliminated. When it is made mandatory, you can't leave the office unless you finish your diary. Then people sit down and write the diary because we tend to have memory loss. 2 days later, if I ask you what you did today, you may not remember. Okay, so it's good to write it down. When you write it down, it's fresh. Of course, there is one issue here. Some people may write down things which they have not done, either deliberately or otherwise. This could also happen. It's time consuming and reduces productivity and time of the employees. I wouldn't totally agree with this because all it needs is maybe 10 minutes or 15 minutes for an employee to write it down. And today with the soft copy available, it becomes much more easier. Critical incident method is another way of collecting job data. This method is qualitative approach to obtain specific behaviorally focused description of work. Now, let me explain this thing. Critical incident is nothing but an incident that stands out. You know, daily you're working in a routine. There's a critical incident that happens. Today you have had a major showdown with your boss. Or you have done something so remarkably good that the whole department has been benefited because of that. Some cost cutting you have done. Now that becomes a critical incident. Now this critical incident is a very important source of job data collection. Employees are asked to describe several incidents based on their past experience. The incidents are collected and classified according to the job areas they describe. The analyst must possess excellent analytical skills to translate incidents into meaningful statements. Method is difficult and time consuming. It requires superior skills, ultra superior skills to understand that a critical incident has spoken about the job profile other than what is given there. The critical incident data that we collect is talking about what could happen even beyond the job profile or the job description or the job specification. See, critical incident I would like to interpret in the following manner. A critical incident is happening as a stretch of a human endeavor. A critical incident is happening as a stretch of a human endeavor. It means what? You notice those things that have happened in your own organization with you or the people around you. Many a time, a critical incident is something which is out of the ordinary. When it could be negative in the form of a showdown with your boss, or it could be positive in the form of a breakthrough or an innovation that you've done. Now, all of you will agree that a critical incident is driven by the individual. It is not dictated by the job profile. So the critical incident gives us immense amount of information, knowledge, wisdom about how job profiles have got their own limitation. Human endeavor goes, it spills outside the box of the job profile. That's the beauty about it. So I would look at critical incidents as creative energies which help the company to understand that job profile alone doesn't matter. There's something called a human endeavor. And the human endeavor gives us a signal that this is what needs to be done. If there's a negative incident like a showdown with a job, it tells you why the showdown happened, how the job structure has not been proper, how the behaviors have not been properly addressed on one hand. On the other hand, it says if it's an innovation, if it's a creative approach, then it says that look, you're not tapping me properly. I can do this by my endeavor. So both these extreme examples I'm giving you is going to help us in understanding that the critical incident way of collecting job data is immensely, immensely useful. Okay? So, we also need support from the top management. Last but not the least, many organizations hire job analysts for doing job analysis. Top management does it as a perfunctory process. Karne ka jo karo, just do it. And after doing it, the top management themselves are not falling in line. If I am a company and I'm hiring you as a job analyst, it's important for me to first walk my talk. If you tell me that your job profile should be so and so, I should not brush you off. I need correction because if I have to create a system, I must be the first person to follow the system. So if the top management doesn't go along with this, then the whole cookie crumbles. For a job analysis to be successful, the top management has to make it clear to all employees that their participation is extremely important. They must cooperate. In many organizations, the employees resist giving information. I call it MRTP, Monopoly Restrictive Trades Practices. Okay? And when they give, or some of them are so very devious, they give you wrong information. It's very common among human beings. Now, the top management should make it as an important feature that you must give information when people come to you. And they must make it mandatory. There should be a there should be a very strict communication coming from the top. So when that happens, then employees will participate. And they must also feel unthreatened. That's very important. Unfortunately, in most cases, it is not communicated by the top management, thus rendering the whole process ineffective. Relying on a single source or a method to be effective, job analysis must be based on multiple sources and more than one method for data collection. Very important. What are the problems we face in job analysis? No training provided to employees. While collecting job data from employees, proper training must be to be provided to generate quality data that is useful for job analysis. When I come to you for collecting some data, you must be told how to give a data to me. That's the training we are talking about. If you give data in a very insipid elementary form, you must know the purpose for which I have come to you. I have to articulate the purpose to you. The top management has to also tell you that this is the purpose for which he is coming. Please cooperate. Give him the data in the way he wants it. That training should be given. They are using a big word called training, but it's not training. It's basically that person should be made aware. Orientation has to be given to him. Distortion of activities. Many times employees perceive job analysis as a threat to their jobs. See, I spoke about time and motion studies and work study, industrial engineering area. So person is doing a job, I keep observing him. Now when I observe him, he feels that, see, nobody likes to be observed when they do their job in the organization. If somebody keeps looking at you, you feel very much uncomfortable, you stop doing the job and you start getting a fear, you start feeling that I am going to be, something is going to happen to me. That fear will completely demotivate you and you will be out of the whole thing. This is one of the issues that we face when people are observed. Okay? Job design, nature and importance of job design we are discussing now. Now what's a job design? It starts after completing the job analysis. Now a job design, this term, we need to understand it. Job design is a term that is coined to explain how a job is structured so that the human motivation is taken care of. Okay? The job design is a means by which the job is structured. We are structuring the job in such a way that the human motivation takes place. Job design and motivation, two key terms. Remember this. When we say job design, we are not designing the job. That's designing in the sense we are structuring it. We put the activities in such a way that boredom is reduced. That we add variety to the job. We make the job more involved for the employee. You know, he starts looking forward to doing the job. Now, this is required for human beings because we get bored very soon. You know, we are creatures of habit. After something is exciting initially, then you start losing interest in that. So how to keep on motivating people? One of the methods of doing it is, what HR has to do is create job designs. So in a job design, it involves efforts to organize tasks, duties and responsibilities into a unit of work so as to achieve certain objectives. It involves specification of individual tasks to be done, specification of methods to perform these tasks, combination of tasks into specific jobs for assigning to the individual. Now all these steps are pointing towards behavioral congruence. The person will feel like doing it. Certain jobs are so monotonous that we need to design it. Imagine an assembly line of all, say a computer factory, hardware factory, and the assembly line is very, very monotonous, or a bottling plant. Now in the bottling plant, we have to have different ways of designing the jobs so that people are adding variety to their work. When you add variety to the work, what happens? You start looking forward to doing the work. The work has to be done. The job is basically monotonous. But how to add variety is a part of job design. Job design has to satisfy organizational requirements and individual needs. Well-designed jobs reduce costs and increase efficiency. Badly designed jobs are difficult to fill and cause absenteeism and higher labor turnover. Many companies are oblivious. They are not aware that certain jobs, the nature of the business is such, the nature of the unit is such, it has got a lot of hazards. Now when hazards are there, or when the job is not very exciting, it gets monotonous, the top management has to realize that we need to somehow attract people by very good methods. What most of these companies do is they give a lot of money. Money is the greatest motivator. It is one of the most misquoted. It's not a motivator all the time, especially for jobs like this. That's why many organizations which are falling in this category of hazardous working or, you know, boring working, you don't find people sustaining for long. Attritions are too high. in the same type of industry, in certain other companies, we find people are working for a long period of time and yet they don't leave the company because there they are having better job design. Okay? In future, well-designed jobs will become more important in attracting and retaining motivated workforce which will be capable of producing high-quality products and services. This is going to be the future scenario. Job design is affected by organizational environment and behavioral factor. Now we'll be discussing three factors: organizational, environmental and behavioral factors that impact the job design. Organization factors is about the company within. Behavior, environmental is outside the company and as well as inside the company. And behavioral is about the people. Now in organization we are talking about the structure of the organization, the way the company is running, the culture, the policies, etc. Now this is fitted into the inner climate. And these two put together is an impacted by the external climate outside the organization. And all this cannot run unless there is a behavioral element of people. So these three factors are what we are going to be discussing now. Organization factors. Characteristics of a task. Tasks are very complex. Since tasks are complex, what happens? We have to make them simpler. How do we make them simpler? See, a certain task has to be done. It is complex. So I break them into small parts. And they need to be, to do this, I need to go through the various processes which we learnt in principles of management. I have to plan my task, I have to execute it properly, I have to control it effectively. All those things I need to do. It should be a systematic approach. Anything that is complex needs to go through a systematic, step-by-step scientific approach. Clear cut. Workflow. The workflow affects the job design. It is determined by the nature of the product or the service. After the sequence is finalized, time and workforce involved in completing a particular job is determined. I take a certain path of completing a work. A certain chemical is produced by certain steps and certain processes. Now that will affect the job design. Obviously, it's an organizational thing. The nature of the industry to which you belong will determine the workflow. And that workflow will affect the job design. So that is an organizational factor. Next comes ergonomics. Designing and shaping jobs to fit the physical abilities and the characteristics of the individual so that jobs are performed better. You must be knowing ergonomics from the viewpoint of the chair on which you sit in the computer. There are ergonomically designed chairs which gives you the human comfort and reduces your fatigue. At the same time, the interface between man and machine becomes much, much easier so that your productivity keeps increasing. It's basically man and machine in harmony with each other and the surroundings. At the same time, the surroundings are pleasant. I can adapt to a very difficult condition. No, it's not about that. It's about adapting at the same time making it pleasant. So, designing and shaping jobs to fit the physical abilities and the characteristics of the individuals so that jobs are performed better and nature of the job remains same but layout, methods, tools arranged to suit the employees. You know, we make frequently furniture shift at homes. Many housewives do this. The television is kept near the, let's say it's kept near the wall unit, and then after 6 months they'll shift it to some other place. And we guys, we men, when we go home, we are confused sometimes, right? Now this furniture shift is to create a certain type of a change. It's a form of a work design. You know, all of you will agree that it becomes too monotonous having the same thing in the same place all the time. So we all do it, isn't it? Except a few individuals. And the purpose of doing that is to ensure that you are having a comfortable, harmonious environmental relationship. Okay? Work practices. These are the set ways of performing work. You know, we have been doing it for so many years, it's going on. Don't disturb it. Okay? These are determined by the time and the motion study, and failure to consider work practices can lead to resistance from employees. Okay? So, in other words, set ways of doing things, which are working very well, which are producing results, also affect our job design. Now we come to environmental factors. Employees' abilities and availability. Efficiency consideration must be balanced against the abilities and availability of the people who are to do the work. Employees have got some skills, abilities, some capabilities, some competencies, and they should also be available. We have got people outside in the open who are qualified, but are they available? Will they join my company? Environmental factors that affects the job design. Changes in the expectations of employees. Today employees are educated. They are more aware. The media has made it very aware. And so their expectations are very high. So when the expectations are high, I have to design my job accordingly. Globalization, a very important factor. Today, organizations are going beyond the boundaries of the city to which they belong, to the state to which they belong, to the country to which they belong, and they are globally spread out. So when they're globally spread out, to attract global employees into my company, I need to have a job design that is carefully thought out. Now we come to behavioral factors. Employees need to, first is feedback. Employees need to receive feedback that the job they perform has certain significance in the overall operations of the organization. Employees need to, they need to be felt that they are important, genuinely important, not as a strategy. Okay. Now this behavioral part of it, keep on giving them feedback, you're doing good or you need correction, employee, motivate them. When you do that, it's going to be affecting the job pretty well in terms of taking it further. Next comes autonomy. Jobs that provide employee authority to take decisions increase an employee's self-esteem, which in turn increases productivity. If a particular job is so dependent on many other factors, the employee feels helpless. He doesn't feel he's creating something new. On the other hand, if the employee is given that feeling that he has this decision only you have to take, he feels important. When he feels important, there's an autonomy which he experiences, and that actually is a great motivator for people. Use of abilities. The job design has to make full use of the abilities in employees so that job satisfaction is assured. This is not being done in many companies. Many managers, many supervisors do not know what are the full abilities and skills of their employees, and instead of exploiting the skills which are available, they put them in a different direction where the skills are lost. This is very crucial in a job design. Variety. Lack of variety in a job leads to boredom and fatigue. However, too much variety makes jobs complex and they may remain incomplete. So we have to put a requisite amount of variety in the job. It should not be too much, not too less. It can't be too bland, nor it can become so exciting that you don't know where you're going. Too much excitement is dangerous. At the same time, too much monotony can kill you. We need a combination of these two things. Autonomy, factors affecting job design, autonomy. As I've already explained, autonomy increases self-esteem, use of abilities, variety. This is a repeat slide. Okay. Now we come to an important point called critical thinking. Critical thinking simply means that when a task is given, something is in front of you, you start looking at it from a very deep angle, from different aspects. You see, when you are doing anything to do with a complex system, one single way of thinking doesn't work. My thinking or whatever I am saying is not the only thinking. You have to go and test it with other people. So when I create the skills to step out of my habitual thinking, I am into critical thinking. It's very important that critical thinking is to be developed by all of us. So let's go through the slide. The skill of the 21st century workforce, it needs critical thinking. It's not abstract. It's not a difficult skill to attain. When we are more involved with informal discussions, informal working day to day, when there's a lot of encouragement for creativity to happen, innovation to happen, critical skills automatically develop. At the most important basic level, it's a process of identifying and evaluating evidence relevant to decision making. Being objective and not subjective. When a work is to be done, how to do it? What are the various abilities required? It's not about who does it. It's all about the task. It's not about the people alone. So when I talk about the task, I am into critical thinking. Objective. Critical thinking allows an employee to objectively evaluate the information to reach a conclusion. No emotions. Emotions are there, but that doesn't override the objective part of what needs to be done. This skill is required at all levels and domains in any organization. Progressive organizations encourage their people by their own culture to create what are called as critical thinking skills. In fact, there are some organizations where I do critical thinking training. And it's mind-boggling to realize that people at the middle management level, even at the senior level, many of them have stuck up into their thinking process that they can't step out of the box. And they can't look at a problem from a different angle. Okay? It's hampered by fallacies of relevance. Critical thinking is hampered or obstructed by fallacies or errors of relevance, insufficiency, inconsistency, and inappropriateness. Critical thinking has to be relevant. It is nice to do something very crazy. It's nice to do something out of the box, but that should have some relevance. So when I say critical thinking, I'm doing out of box thinking. I'm doing it with the idea of bringing a solution for what I'm addressing, not just for the heck of it. It's not the flavor of the day. It is to be done because I need to do it for a certain solution to be provided. Okay. Staying objective is crucial to critical thinking. This has already been told to you. Critical thinking is important in strategic problem solving and planning and organizing. In today's highly competitive markets, clients, projects, deadlines and targets drive day-to-day operations and strategic decision making. Anything that we are doing complex requires critical thinking. I am talking to you right now. The amount of planning we need to do to make this thing happen requires critical thinking. Where to do it, how to do it, how to optimize the human effort, how to use the best of technology, how to make it interesting. So many factors have been taken into account by the institute, by the faculty, by my support team who are behind the camera. All these people have to do this. All this requires critical thinking. And we share ideas. There are things I do not know which my team helps me to know. There are things which I have to tell them. There are things which the institute tells me. So, unless we are open-minded, critical thinking won't happen. We are into it. Now, as a result, employees have to make decisions on the move and offer solutions that optimize the business prospects of the organization. Workplace assessment of critical thinking is crucial in creating the right work environment that offers sustained solutions driving positive growth. Worded, just to explain what I've already explained to you. Critical thinking needs to be or recognized as an essential skill in organizations if we have to become successful in a globalized business arena. It's a must today, critical thinking. Why are we covering critical thinking in job design in this particular chapter? Because job designing involves critical thinking. A critical thinking in a job design or a job analysis is going to help you to think very expansively about your own company. We come to the summary, friends. Job analysis is a process which involves collection of information regarding knowledge, skill and ability an employee possesses to perform a job effectively. It is useful for all personal activities like human resource planning, hiring and training of employees, deciding compensation for appraising performance of employees. Job analysis process consists of the 5 steps which we have already explained. And these steps are making strategic choices, gathering of information, processing of information, preparation of job description and specification. Some of the methods used in job analysis are questionnaires, checklists, job performance, observation and interviews. For an effective job analysis, the support of top management and wholehearted participation of the employees is a must. Job design involves efforts to organize tasks, duties and responsibilities into a unit of work so as to achieve certain objectives. A well-designed job is the key to a company's survival and growth. Job design is affected by organization, environment and behavioral factors. So friends, with this we conclude this module. Thank you very much and happy participation. All the best.